A few years ago, the ad revenue forecasts for podcast advertising were estimated to pass the $1 billion mark in 2023. But that actually happened in 2021. As both startup and mainstream brands flood dollars into podcast and digital audio advertising, many companies still struggle with how to accurately measure the impact these channels have on driving ROI. Claritas has emerged as a leader in helping brands, publishers, and agencies accurately measure attribution and the incremental lift podcasts and digital audio channels have on helping marketers drive success. Listen to their latest podcast to hear more about the current and future direction of these high-impact, yet still somewhat emerging channels. For more information, visit claritas.com/claritas-podcast. Descriptions of leadership have become gendered and in many cases reflect an outdated characterization of what makes good leadership. In this talk from Advertising Week Europe 2023, Wacko leads a panel discussion on what steps forward need to happen in order to accelerate this much-needed change.
So thank you so much, first of all, for choosing to be here with us. I really appreciate it. I know how competitive these sessions are at Adweek, having been involved with Matt Shetner and the team over the years. So it's always an honour to see so many of you here in the room and to be part of the schedule. I'm Nishma Robb, and my day job is being Senior Director of Marketing for Brand and Reputation Marketing at Google. I call it my side hustle, but it's probably my other job, is I am incoming president to Wackle. And I'm delighted to say that today's session is brought to you by Wackle and Advertising Week. And I should just start with letting you know what Wackle is, because you're going to hear so many acronyms, I'm sure, if you're at Adweek. Wackle stands for Women in Advertising and Communication Leadership. And it's a phenomenal club. It's actually celebrating its 100th year, which when you think about actually the progress we've made, or perhaps sometimes the progress we haven't made as women, I'm always astounded by the giants whose shoulders we stand upon in this industry. The club is made up of around 200 of the most senior leaders in media, advertising, marketing, creative and communications. So it's an incredible group of women who really make wonderful things happen. Our mission as a club is to really improve and increase and achieve gender equality for the benefit of all. We have always keenly looked at all the data and the statistics in terms of progress, and we've set ourselves a very clear mission this year called 50%. And that's about achieving 50% at a CEO level in every business. That's not to say we don't care about every level, but we know we're seeing progress at the more junior levels, but we still fail to see that progress at the top. And I won't terrify you, and I'm sure you've all seen the data and statistics. I mean, I'm not going to see parity in my lifetime, and at the moment, not alone in my teenage daughter's lifetime. So there is work to be done, and we're literally putting our foot to the floor because we're going to accelerate change. So our session today is called Changing the Language of Leadership. And this was something that I've loved the work that the amazing team at Wackle have done in terms of the research they've done into this, in really looking at what are the barriers to achieving gender equality. And actually, one of the most insidious barriers to achieving gender equality is the one that's there hiding in plain sight in front of all of us, the one that perhaps we unconsciously do or have considered, and that's language. Again, probably not a huge surprise to many of you, but when I read the research and really got into this, and there's many studies done by whether it's McKinsey or the Wharton University, it's slightly shocking in terms of thinking about some of the questions when they've asked male members or members overall to describe the words that they would use to describe the characteristics of leadership. I'm sure, and we haven't got time, as I would definitely come out to you and ask you what some of those are, but things like strong, arrogant, intelligent, egotistical. And I think, interestingly, those words were used in a complementary sense and not used in the same way when describing female characteristics. It seems outdated and irrelevant when you think about leadership, let alone gender. So I'm joined by an incredible panel today who have got are going to bring some real wisdom to this. And we're going to have a discussion around not only the challenges of language, but most importantly, what we can do about it. And we want this to be really action orientated. So I'm going to let the panellists, because they're so incredible with so many achievements, and if they leave any off, I will note them and call them out, but I'm going to let them all introduce themselves. So Dino, who is our own very own celebrity, it's funny, we stood at the front, everyone stops Dino. So I'm pretty sure you'll know who he is, but I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
Nishma, the way you've introduced me, it now sounds, I was going to do it really quick and really short, and now
you've got to give a bit more.
So I am Dino, so I'm a founder of my own company called The Barbershop, which is a strategic creative company, you know, working across media, creative and technology. But alongside that, I do a number of different things. You know, co-chair the Conscious Advertising Network. I'm a trustee for Brixton Finishing School. One of the founding members with Nishma for Media for All. I'm a non-exec director for MGOMD now. Everyone thinks I'm now full-time there. I'm non-exec. And a bunch of other things, Marketing Society Fellow. And I mention these things because actually, I think in terms of the role of kind of equality, is not my job, but it's a large part of the things that I'm involved in. So that's why I mention these things.
Brilliant.
Can't wait to go after that. Hi, everybody. My name is Dina. I am the founder and managing director of Avenir Network. We're an equity, diversity and inclusive leadership cultural change consultancy. I am also an advisory board member on BRIM, which stands for Black Representation in Marketing. It's an initiative started by Meta 2 years ago. I'm also the lead trainer and coach for NABS's Inclusive Leadership Masterclass program, and I am a Time 2 facilitator, part of the NABS team as well for that. That's it. I'm not on a non-exec yet.
Oh, yeah.
Might change.
Maybe after this session. Josh.
Let's put
the feelers out.
Yeah, put the feelers out. Hi, everyone. Morning. I'm Josh Bullmore. I'm Chief Strategy Officer at Leo Burnett, the ad agency. So I'm delighted to be here to talk about the power of language. That's been a big part of my day job for 20 years. But I'm also super conscious that we're talking about inequality. And I'm a man, I'm white, I'm straight, I'm cis, and I've been the beneficiary of a lot of inequality over the years, like people like me have. But I'm here, I'm a firm believer in the idea that inclusion takes all of us, as the saying goes. And so I'm here as an ally. So I'm here hopefully to contribute, but I'm here also to learn.
Yes, you are very much an ally, Josh, but thank you for
saying that.
So I'm going to start maybe slightly provocatively, because I did list out some words that we've seen in pieces of research and perhaps things that we've all kind of been more familiar with in terms of how leadership has been described. So I'm going to ask each of you to say, what would be the one word or words that you would never want to hear again when describing leadership characteristics? Dino, I know we've talked about this.
Yeah, before. I mean, it's a word that you mentioned as one of the key kind of three big wrong words, which is strong, actually. And the reason why I would say that is because I think that a lot of leadership has been associated with, you know, kind of rules of the past, you know, kind of war and kind of like competitiveness in terms of leading troops. And strong is a natural word that flows out of that in terms of when you're fighting battles. But I don't think business and modern business is that at all. I think that strong is completely the wrong word. You know, the majority of leadership is about getting teams to do their best work and inspiring, about vision or being visionary. But, you know, empathy and collaboration and persuasive skills, those are the much more kind of like emotive skills that I think, you know, any successful leader that I've worked for or whatever or with has had those skills. And they haven't been strong. Actually, the ones that have been less successful have probably been perceived more as like strong leaders. Mm. You know, almost kind of like fronting a way forward and acting a stereotype rather than actually being someone that you can relate to. And I think that kind of like the word strong kind of comes with risk taking and decision making and being kind of like bold and brash. And I think that's where lone warriors can make mistakes and companies can go in wrong directions.
Yeah, and there's definitely an inference of the opposite as well. So if you're not strong, what's that description?
Yeah.
Dina?
Yeah, so I went a bit off piece here and I asked a number of different women, either in leadership roles or looking to go into leadership roles, what words would they not want to see? And it was cultural fit, resilience, works well under pressure, can maneuver a complex matrix. And basically, the two main things that came up was, we don't want to hear words that talk about cultural fits, because it kind of means you're going to, this is stick with the status quo, don't mix things up, don't set your own boundaries, fall into line. But also, we're chaotic, and if you don't work in the way that we work, or you try to bring change, that could be challenged. So any language that refers to being a certain way, or words that imply that this is the culture here, you need to slide into that, we don't want to see.
Yeah, which is, as you say, so cultural fit in itself is so... has so many connotations to it.
Yeah.
Josh?
I love that idea that actually people need to fit in rather than the fact they're adding something and bringing something to the party. So, yeah, I think that makes an awful lot of sense. The word I was going to use, the word I'd like to ban, is, I think it sums up the whole double standards around language, is a word like bossy, for example. I don't know why a man might be described as assertive or decisive, but a woman might be labelled bossy in a clearly derogatory way, and I think it probably says more about fragile male egos than it does about women. But I'd bin the word bossy.
I'm going to touch on that, because throughout my career I've been described as feisty, and I've yet to meet
right.
a man
right.
who's been described as feisty.
So. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Josh is terrified now. Look.
Oh, yeah.
Josh has never called
away.
Me feisty.
No, I haven't called you feisty. I wouldn't dare. No.
There was a great campaign, wasn't it, about that sense of telling little girls that they're bossy. And you're right, the challenge of language particularly starts at such a young age, beyond, as you say, the things you've all quoted here that I'm sure many people have been asked in interviews to describe their leadership style and have probably used these words. So, moving on a little bit, I just want to say, in your opinion, you know, I think there's an opportunity to define actually what does good leadership mean, particularly in a post-pandemic world, in particular a more inclusive style. Actually, what are the words that we should be? You know, what's your opinion on how we shape this language? Josh, do you want to kick us off on that one?
Yeah. I think actually last few years have revealed what doesn't work as much as anything. Because if the sort of big truths have been like volatility and uncertainty, I think they've reveal quite comprehensively that those traditional models, the sort of strong leadership you were talking about, kind of top-down, command and control, parent-child, that kind of style of leadership has just proved to be not up to the task. And I think there's a couple of reasons. I think, firstly, because it's too rigid, and actually, amid all this volatility, you need something that's a lot more flexible. And I think the second is they disempower people, and we need to unlock people's potential and unlock people's resourcefulness. And I think if the pandemic and the last few years have shown anything, it's like how actually amazingly resourceful people are when given the chance to be. So I think that's what has proven not to have worked. And I think there's a phrase that makes a lot of sense to me, which is about a modern style of leadership that combines competence and compassion. And those two things together, it kind of says, actually, I don't know, I'll invite people in. And I think at Leo's, we've seen over the last few years, we've actually had a much more democratic, consultative style of leadership than I've ever seen in an agency before, where the big issues like D&I or how to get back into the office, we've had big all-agency sessions, got everyone in and kind of co-created the plan. It's worked a lot better. I know there are some places that have been kind of, right, you're going to come back into the office this many days, etc. Real command and control. And people push back. Mm. I think it's changed. There's been a sea change. So, yeah. Competence and compassion. Those would be the ingredients, I'd say.
Yeah. And you definitely see that in terms of the challenging conversations lots of leaders are having at the moment about that hybrid working, return to work, etc.
Yeah.
Dino, thinking about inclusion and that sense of creating that more modern style of leadership. What's your experience? You know, what do you think? How should we be shaping this now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the pandemic has shown, you know, pre-pandemic, there were all those leaders that said, you know, even flexible working, working from home, these things will never work. And the pandemic forced them to work, but forced, you know, technology and everyone just to get up to the modern times and just to kind of make it work. But what was found was there were different people that work in different ways, right? You know, there's different people that are better working in their own environments, different people that are better working in social environments with everyone else, different people when there's ice cream in the office and, you know, and that brings them in or whatever else. But ultimately, the lesson is that, you know, not everyone in your team and your staff is exactly the same. and this kind of like empathetic leadership, understanding, right? So it's just about understanding that there's not this one kind of characteristic that makes a brilliant employee. Mm. And, you know, and that kind of office environment of, you know, who puts their hand up first or turns up to every meeting isn't necessarily showing the person that's most interested or most keen or got most amount to contribute. So I guess it's about, you know, leaders sat at home, you know, lonely in their massive houses, thinking, how do I connect with my team, right? Yeah. And I think it just made people go through that kind of process of thinking a bit harder about how is everyone feeling, actually, because they had time to think about how they were feeling. So this kind of self-reflection, I think that the conclusion from that is that, yeah, people are different and people work in different ways and people need different things. And this kind of thing about cultural fit, there isn't just this kind of like one single culture that you want everyone to be. It's about, you know, you've got to go and explore what your culture is. Once your company gets past a certain size, you haven't got a clue, really. You know, you've got to do the work to try and find out what your culture is. And your culture isn't just you as a leader, what you're telling everyone to be. So I think it's about being really perceptive to differences. But also, I think it's really important to realize that you get a better product by having, you know, different personalities and different types and, you know, and that working harmoniously together. Mm. To just create a greater thing that you couldn't do with, you know, with the same type of people.
Mm. I mean, I've also really, as you say, that I think the pandemic kind of all heightened our senses and awareness and need to engage. But also I've seen, which isn't often described as a strong leadership trait, is vulnerability. Mm. And actually, particularly when you talk about inclusion, I've seen so many leaders trip over the words. They're like, what do I say? How do I say this? How do I engage? How do I encourage allyship? And how do I demonstrate being a great ally? I would love to see that as kind of the way that we think about modern leadership as well, mm. is leaders being comfortable to demonstrate vulnerability and that accessibility. Mm. So, Dean, I'm going to ask you now. Why we know, you know, it's obvious sense when you think about leadership. I don't even like the idea of kind of genderizing leadership. Yeah. But why is it so important in order to change that language and do it at pace when we're thinking about gender equality?
Great question. So for me, we have to take a intersectional lens when we talk about wanting to achieve the 50-50 split of the ambitions that WACL have and other businesses within our industry. We need to understand that not one solution works for everyone, and particularly when we're talking about women. So I talk very much about the two main identity markers that I have, which is my womanness and my blackness, and the discrimination that I may face because of both or one or another. But that experience will be different if I were gay or queer or physically disabled as well. So there isn't a solution that's going to work just for all women. And when we talk about gender equity and why the language is really important in terms of when we're looking at leadership, I just want to draw us to the survey that was released last week from the Ed Association. So that was 19,000 recipients from across the UK advertising and marketing industry. And it was a real opportunity for us all within the industry to understand what's happening now and what are the challenges and what does that look like. There was some really interesting data around women and women of colour that I think are really important for us to consider when we're having this conversation. So we know 1% of C-suite leaders are black. That will be less if we're looking at gender as well. We also know that 1 in 3 black recipients said that they feel that they don't belong within our industry. A third of women said that they're all within their organisation, they felt that different genders were treated differently, so it wasn't equal playing field, and that was significantly higher for women of colour. And then if we look at just the US and the UK, the biggest developing groups of entrepreneurs after white males are black females, right? So why are we exiting the workplace? Because it fundamentally, the traditional way is not a place that we can thrive. So I worked in the industry for 16 years and I'm now running my own business because I want to be part of the solution of why did I feel that I couldn't thrive within the industry? So I'm still doing all of the things that I love, but it's focused on the solution for inclusion. So when we're looking at this problem, I will summarise this up. When we're looking at this problem, it's essential that we have that intersectional lens so that we're not leaving anybody, any woman behind in this conversation. And we're showcasing all women at all levels, all genders at all levels, ensuring that people are encouraged to go for those promotions and meeting them where they're at. So when we talk about different solutions, some people may benefit from coaching, others it may be mentoring, others it's sponsorship, but really allowing as leaders that that's what we're encouraging, not this works for me so it will work for everybody else, but really understanding where we're meeting people at where they're at. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I think certainly in our kind of mission of getting 50% of women to a CEO or to a board level position is the fact that actually we've also struggled with the fact that a lot of them don't want it.
Yeah.
You know, because of the environment or the culture they've seen, actually, you know, that there is a challenge. Do they give up? Do they leave? Do they go and find new avenues? And what we want to do is encourage more leadership into there and make sure that environment's there. Josh, from within your agency, but also you have that incredible position of being able to kind of see across your clients. And when you're thinking about the way we're communicating externally, what do you see in terms of perhaps, you know, the opportunity of changing language, not just at leadership, but in scale?
Yeah, it's interesting talking about this Ebweek, not just because we're businesses that need female leadership, but we're businesses that have an impact in culture. And therefore, the language we use in our comms has got an opportunity to play a big part. Which is partly why you need a diverse set of people to create it, so it talks to people, so it understands the nation it's creating for. But I think one of the issues that was really struck me working with clients is something you touched on earlier, actually, about how young all of these negative impact that Dina's talking about starts. And I learned it working with P&G on their Always brand, and we were looking at all the research and academic research around confidence, and what we discovered is that everyone's confidence drops during puberty. I think we probably all recognize that, but the really shocking thing is that girls' confidence drops twice as far as boys' confidence, and it never recovers to the same levels. It's absolutely shocking. There's this gap, this confidence gap, and we looked at why, and it's language plays a massive part in it, and it's language like the phrase, like a girl, which is used as an insult. You throw like a girl, you run like a girl. And so that particular campaign, we looked to flip that and go, actually, why can't that mean something powerful? And it was a very successful, long-running campaign that looked to do that. So I think there are other opportunities. You were talking about the word boss and how that could be flipped. And actually, I'm really pleased to see that that has been, parts of culture have taken that and flipped it and said, yeah, I'm going to do something like a boss. I'm going to boss it. Use that and turn that into something powerful. And I think there are so many of these double standards, and I love the way that they're being re-owned and reclaimed and taken as something powerful. So, yeah.
And I think that opportunity, I completely agree, in terms of thinking about changing the language of leadership as leaders who can actively do that, but also through our work and inspiring future generations. One of the things that we're doing at WACL is really investigating this idea of represent me. So right. The sense of, you know, I have the perfect A-B experiment here because I have boy-girl twins.
Right.
So I have seen the impact that language can have on children, on boys and girls, yeah. And actually what can be done around this and can be actively managed through that period of time, but seeing actually the external factors that do that and how critical it is that we're letting and thinking about how younger people want leadership to be defined. Because actually I would say not only are the terms that we've discussed today outdated from the way we think about and what would improve gender equality, actually if you think about future generations of our workforces and our teams, it's completely irrelevant to them.
I think in terms of source of hope though, you talk about children, I look at the way I've got a little boy, he's 8, and the way he's being raised, what he talks about at school, is so much more progressive than what we were taught. So I think there's a generation that will come through. I think it's actually this, our age group needs to do the work. We need to do the work. I think they're going to be a lot more enlightened than we are.
So getting a little bit more practical in our last few minutes, what can organisations do? What are your tips? How are we going to drive this home?
I mean, so you know, this whole thing's about language. So language particularly can be changed to, you know, make it more appealing for women across the board. But you need to change the actual kind of statistics and the numbers. And I think that the WACL study that's come out talks about measure with meaning. And that's key because what you want is environments that, you know, women know are, you know, are open to, you know, the change. And they can only know that by the statistics, being, you know, intersectional statistics that show actually there are people like me, this organisation is open, it's welcoming. They understand the needs and the differences, rather than I've got to get in there and battle to make the change happen. Like, no one's got time and energy for that. There are good companies out there that are doing it, that are leading. So we just need to know which ones, you know, which those companies are. So you just gravitate towards those. I think that the other thing is, in terms of, you know, practical steps, I really don't understand in terms of, I think that secretly there's probably a load of male leaders out there that want the culture of leadership to change, right? Because, you know, this idea of, you know, being this kind of like lone, right? All the decisions are you, this big kind of leader. It's not good for anyone, right? Back to that whole kind of like, some people don't want the job, right?
Yeah.
You know, if people are honest with themselves, they don't want the job as it's currently designed. But it's teed up in this way that it's like, yeah, that's the only way you can be somebody, right? You've got to be this kind of type of leader. But there are organizations that do it differently, that flip that hierarchy a bit more, make the leader much more of a, you know, an inclusive kind of nurturer, open kind of role, where the team is the one that's elevated. And I think that's what organizations need to do more of. Make less of the hero being the leader, and more of this kind of democratization of the talent, particularly in our industry, because our industry is one that people are the currency, people are the thing, the product. As much as we talk about tech tools, whatever else, that's it, you know, it's really the people and the people within the teams that are the difference. So we've got to elevate that more.
Yeah, I agree. And you're so right that we shouldn't fall into the trap of treating all men or all types of leaders as one homogenous group, because that's just not right. Dina, with all your work, what would the practical tips you'd give people?
So there's two things. One is, in terms of being a leader, it's about all of the things that we've talked about, being empathetic, having that emotional intelligence to be able to flex and be adaptable. I always encourage leaders to kind of think of KPIs in a different way. So keep people inspired, keep them informed, keep them interested and keep them involved. That is a great way to kind of ensure that you have what we talked about, which is people feeling included and then the productivity and the work speaking for itself and that hitting your bottom line. But also work with experts in the space. So if you're not expected to know the answers, you can see that there are challenges. Come to people like me. Because it's A, I know what I'm doing, but B, from a perspective of marginalised women in your organisation, them seeing you work with people that look like them, who understands those challenges and can work with you with the solutions, does so much more for their self-confidence and them wanting to stay within your business, because you're showing that you have that dedication to the work that needs to be done. I always say, look, I have a plumber that does the plumbing, but I don't ask him about my finances, right? Apply the same logic to your business. You're good at doing what you're doing as a leader doesn't mean that you have the answers in terms of inclusive leadership and how you bring marginalised communities, women, other genders into that conversation. So work with the experts that do.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I think all of you demonstrate and are role modelling incredible leadership and a modern leadership in a way that I hope we can shape leadership. If I could just bring up the slides. So just to end with, I think we were keen to make this as actionable as possible, and I hope at least just hearing some alternative perspectives on this discussion help you. Got the slides up? They're just two slides with just some actions on them. So three key takeaways. I think one of the things we talked about there was, and is critical, and this is from our research and work at WACL, is about creating the environment for your female colleagues to succeed. Really thinking about that kind of flexible, adaptable, and really kind of empathetic leadership that's conscious of the fact that, you know, we've just talked about, it's not everyone has the same style or even kind of, you know, ambition in terms of the way that they want to work. What's going to work for them and work for your business? And actually, do we create that right environment? Role modelling and recognising, which I've loved, and actually I think we've demonstrated here today as well, there are different types of leadership styles and characteristics that some of us are stronger in or not. Actually, I've seen in business I've worked in, the strongest leadership teams is when you see that differentiation in style. And to your point, Dina, is people asking for help and support and demonstrating great allyship. So really think about role modelling. We have a lovely thought, which I'm going to give you a QR code in a minute in the WACL 50% playbook, is around this, you know, five key traits, one of which is like, you know, act like the world is watching. And I always think about that as a leader in the many kind of levels and layers to that, but actually remember what you're inspiring, both in your kind of direct teams and kind of future leaders. And then essentially, I think it's up to us to really redefine what leadership means, and up to you to define that within your business, but in a way that you can be really conscious around how do we make more room and opportunity for women to be able to succeed in the workplace and to take those leadership positions to enhance your business. So I'm going to give you, as I promised, the QR code. This is the work of many brilliant women, Leanne Ray here in the front row being one of them. Thank you so much, Leanne Ray. Scan that QR code. There's loads of great stuff in there. It's been written by women who really understand what it takes in terms of creating gender equality. It's not a preaching piece. It's helpful advice and guidance. Thank you so much for choosing to be here, and I hope you have a brilliant ad week.
Thanks for listening. For more talks from the global stages of Advertising Week, be sure to subscribe to Uncommon Thinking on your podcast platform of choice. Share it with friends and colleagues, and leave us feedback.